Thank you, Jared, for your very kind introduction. I forgot about this bit. What he didn't tell you was that on another occasion at an IPA function, I took along three members of the State Protection Group, and that they were just as quiet. This occasion allows us to do some thinking around, obviously, the relief to reconstruction, which was what the title of the subject was, and we're also joined today with some people that I know. In Brian's case, we've been working with, and Justin I've just come to know. But we're also a range of people who have been partners in this process of the reconstruction. My colleagues from the Victorian Bushfire Reconstruction and Recovery Authority. Now, you might wonder whether you looked and it said Reconstruction and Recovery Authority. It's we're always a bit tricky about whether it should have been the Reconstruction Recovery or Recovery and Reconstruction, but there it is, really. But they're here, and they'll answer questions if I can't. They've volunteered to help, and they have an enormous range of skills. But there are many others. Bruce Esplund is here, very much a part of this whole process, and many others. So I don't stand here as the expert, just someone who will share with you the process that we're going through and that numbers of you are part of. And I think that's probably what distinguishes this recovery for me from perhaps many others, just to see the difference and the range of people. This morning, I was up at a small property in Steeles Creek, which is up at the back of Yarra Glen. And the kind gentleman had allowed us to be there, and the media were there as well, to actually talk about the fact that today is the end of the cleanup operation. And that cleanup operation had 3,000 properties that had been cleaned up. And this man's property, quite significant house that he'd lost, sheds and a range of other parts of it. But as he made the point to the media and Daniel Grollo and I, that it was just an amazing experience for him, having survived the bushfires, but then, as importantly, to have then been part of this whole process of the cleanup and now ready to make decisions about what he does next on his property. But so many people have been involved in so many different sorts of ways, and that has its own challenges, but it's part of the process. So what we'll work through is just a set of slides. I'm sorry, my colleagues over here can't see them, but there you go. It gives you a context, and I think anything you do in life, you need to look at the history, you need to look at the context, and there are many people yet who will have things to say about what happened on that day. And the Royal Commission obviously is a key part of that, but so are many, many others who have their views about what happened. And again, we heard a story today about what happened to this particular family at Steeles Creek. But it was, coming on a prolonged drought, low rainfall, sustained temperatures, all of that. And just if you look at that chart, you can start to see, the temperatures that were around, before, and of course, obviously, then on the 7th, which is the one obviously furthest over. And so it gives you that kind of environment, high temperatures, a wind change. A lot of people, given information around what was to be expected, but that's what it was like. This, when we first put it together, talked about over 300 fires, but I think there are many others who would suggest there were in fact many more. And I remember being up at talking to the CFA chief up at Haven, which is just out of Horsham, which is one of the locations that were involved. And he said to me, "Oh, Christine, the fire came, it just missed Horsham, and it came down and through to Haven." And he said to me, "We rounded it up and were able to put it out." And he struck me, as do many others, that he, typified what happened on that day at many, many, many of the fires that were actually alight on that occasion. And I think, we shouldn't forget the fact that many of those fires were rounded up and put out, but others clearly were not. What was also significant was about the fire activity, and Kevin Tolhurst, who many of us have come to know a lot better and hear about a lot more these days, talks about, the worst situation you can have, and obviously the fires with an energy of 1,500 atomic bombs, size of Hiroshima, which is a massive fire front, and I think anybody who was in it and anybody who saw it or is aware of it or watched the devastation from it had to understand that it was a significant fire and one that many, many of us had never quite seen before. It also spotted, and again, this suggests 15 kilometres, but I went to Yarram, which is down the other end of the state, and at Yarram, they were talking about 30 kilometres worth of spotting. So in Yarram Township itself, they had people with fire hoses on some of the main buildings in the street at Yarram, thinking they were going to lose those main buildings. And so it's a significant size. It was obviously the main complexes that turned out, and these are complexes described by CFA and DSC, but the Bunyip fire was one obviously down in the area around down towards Gippsland Way. Kilmore fire, which was the main fire that most I guess would know more about, which then joined up with the Murrindindi fire, came out of the Murrindindi Mill and joined up around King Lake and Marysville, and in fact much of that. Churchill, as we already know, there's a person being charged with lighting the Churchill fire, but it was allegedly lit, back to my being a police officer, allegedly lit, and then caused major devastation and loss of life. Eagle Hawk, which is really out of Bendigo, and I went to the Bendigo fires and saw the devastation there. It was so close to the township of Bendigo. And was part of it. And Beechworth, which really some of you might not know, but it's really the area from Beechworth down to Stanley and down through Stanley down to the Mudgeegonga, which then is on the road to Bright. But there are a number of others we counted. The Bushfire Recovery and Reconstruction Authority has a responsibility for fires that were lit through the fire period. And then, as you know, the fires continued on as well. And that just gives you a sample of the kind of cover from those fires. And as you can see, it's principally around that what became the sort of combined Kilmore-Murrindindi fire. And that just gives you some of the statistics. The worst and the saddest for all of us was a loss of 173 lives. And as you might recall, we thought we had lost many more people initially. 2,133 properties were destroyed. And there were probably about 1,500 others that were lost sheds or damaged to the house as well. 78 communities, and so I think we all understand it was, in fact, all the way to Horsham, out to Coleraine, down to Pombonite, and then through the middle, through the Murrindindi fire, coming down into Yarra Glen, the edges of Yarra Glen, round the back of Healesville, and of course all the way down to down to Gippsland Way as well, and to Yarram. And so it was a significant size, 78 communities, 25 municipalities, 430,000 hectares. Not as big as, say, the Alpine fires, which is, I think, about 1.2 million hectares, and so a different type of fire, but of course the real difference for most of us, as we know, is it came so close to community stock losses, 2,500 kilometres of fencing, and obviously significant loss of wildlife. And as you can see from the areas, much of the national parks as well were significantly impacted. And this just goes through the areas. But if you look at Eagle Hawk with one fatality and 58 dwellings, Beechworth, two fatalities and 29 dwellings. Kilmore, Murrindindi, the major fire, 159 people died, and 1,639 dwellings, and obviously significant landmass. Churchill with 11 people who died, 247 dwellings as well, and of course the Bunyip fire with 24 dwellings, which is really that Bunyip area, is the Ballara and round Lovatoosh and round that sort of an area. We came on, and this is, I suppose, the main part of what we'll move to, was after the fires. So you come on in Victoria, I think, on an excellent emergency management response. People want to argue about that, but I think it was the best anybody could possibly have done on the day, and well-practiced ways of working with each other. And I won't make any more comment, but it worked through that. And then, of course, we start with emergency relief. There are very solid arrangements in place in Victoria for emergency relief directly after the major event. And the difference, I suppose, in this case was because of the size of the fires, the number of people who died, and the harm that was done, and the complexity, that the government determined to establish a Victorian authority like mine. And so that was very early days that those decisions were made to change what would normally have been the recovery process that Victorian local government, state government, in some cases federal government, are well practiced at putting into place. Other things that happened, the bushfire fund was part of it. That bushfire fund is up at $375 million, and I'm a member of that fund as well, and working through your process. The Royal Commission was announced, as we know, and continues to operate, and I think we'll report on the 14th of... Their first report is the 14th of August, thereabouts. And of course, obviously, the Reconstruction Authority was announced, and I was asked to be the chair of that authority. And it was responsible coordination of the rebuilding and recovery and areas of focus. And we have a model. It's not an unusual model. It's one that emergency management people are very comfortable with, but it really does have five aspects to it, and it underpins what the way we've been operating as an authority. So the first part is about local communities. We've brought together communities into about 28-30 community groups to work with us on as part of the recovery process and forming their own or with council support recovery committees, and working on plans. But watching local communities has been an amazing experience. I've been around a long time, but I've seen some amazing things of what people did and how people are taking leadership roles that many of them never imagined. The second piece, or the second part at the top, is around the people themselves, and that's around obviously their safety, psychological support, a whole range of issues, jobs. It's a lot to do with around the individuals and families. The reconstruction itself and the first phase of that reconstruction was really around the cleanup. So the federal and state government determined to pay for the cleanup. It was done with our recommendation to them to do that, partly because we thought most people would be entirely confused about what they did in the cleanup process. Some would let insurance companies do it, that might have been okay, but what we know from this fire is 75% of people have insurance, 25% don't. But we also thought that even getting, as we were advised, people to be part of that cleanup was also going to be a complicated process and very expensive for many people. So I thought the state and federal government did the best thing they could possibly have done and paid. And Grollo, the GroCon, got the job, and they've coordinated the response across the whole of the state to 3,000 properties today. And the next phases of that, of course, will be the reconstruction housing, but also schools, all of the government infrastructure, roads, a whole range of those. And there is a plan which we're developing, a major piece of our work, federal government, state government, local government and local communities. What do they want? What's part of that reconstruction, helping people recover? And those plans are coming together and will be in place probably about August. And that's an important part. The economy is important. Just some of that, Boston Consulting Group's done a major piece of work for us on Marysville. It's the most devastated community. And so they've been looking at what Marysville was like before, what are the possibilities for the future, what kind of core businesses should it have and how should they be supported. Done a lot of work talking with the community, but so have people within the Reconstruction Authority around how do you work with many of the small businesses that were damaged and how do we get involved in the reconstruction. The environment was significantly damaged. We've had people from DSC. One of the ways we operate is the secretaries of those departments very kindly just gave us people to Christine. We know you need these sorts of people. They need to come and work for you, and that's been part of it. Water was a major issue. King Lake doesn't have reticulated water systems. So if you don't have tanks and the tanks are burnt, you've got to figure out how you're going to get water to people who are still there. And they supplied about 1,400 tank loads or tanks and tanks of water, as well as cleaning those tanks out. And that's just part of the process. And water companies were very generous in supporting us in that regard. But that's just part of it. And that wasn't just in King Lake. It was a range of other locations as well. And then there's obviously how you protect water systems, but there's a whole set of issues under the environment. There are other things we obviously had to do. 26,000 people volunteered to help, and about how across government had to coordinate that response and work with those groups, and 5,500 of them, for instance, have been involved in fencing, in boundary fencing, and there's about 70% of the boundary fencing has been replaced by volunteers. There's also issues around the goods donated, tons and tons, and some of our people over here will have sleepless nights trying to figure out what you do with all of the material that people gave. And it's amazing. They gave lots of money, but they gave lots of other materials as well. And that will be continued to be delivered to those communities. It was given to them. And we've got a very professional process now in place. It's been taking us a while to get the model, you know, for various reasons, but we've got it together. And now we'll continue to deliver to those communities the support that is stored and available to them. I have to say that one of the things we do have huge amounts of is toothpaste. And I think we could supply the entire Victorian community. And I have said to the bushfire people on occasions, you know, I don't know what it was about your teeth, but people seem to be very good. And they get it just like you do. I think part of the other process we've had to do is go out and visit communities. And we have a terrific community engagement group that's come from across government and the community to work with the communities, to help them come together to think about what they want to do, to listen to what's happening. And that's been an important part. I felt it was an important part of my role. And so I've been in all those communities I talked about. I've been in. I think one of the meetings we had with Marysville early, 800 people came to that meeting. And it was the first time those people had been allowed to come back into their community. And pretty interesting meeting. People like Rob Gordon, who's a consultant to the Department of Human Services, have been fantastic in this process, helping people understand what had happened. We had a coronial process as well, then in 3 months. We weren't involved, we obviously liaised with the coroner, and we'll continue to do that in terms of supporting the bereaved in the future. Then that's been an important part of it as well. So it's quite a massive response. You know, and part of this, you know, I think the government, we had so many people come and help us from across other states and in fact other countries. The US sent people as well as funds. UK Red Cross has given $1 million and US, I was in the US recently for a relatively short time and couldn't believe how many people knew about the bushfires. And so I think the process, the authority is in place for 2 years and It's one that the government's made a commitment to be able to help us bring the plans together, to identify what the issues were and to do it in a way that's about the pace of those people who are involved and being sensitive to what people want. And you cannot underestimate the harm that's been done to our communities. And I've met many, many people, 5,500 at least so far, and many others have done the same thing. And you can't but just, you know, be shocked in some cases, be upset by their stories and just in some cases wonder at how, you know, people survived. And then the other part is about the courage of those people as well. But what we've also learned within the authority is an enormous number of lessons. And we've decided we're going to produce a 12-page book because we don't think anybody will read anything more than 12 pages. But it will be the story about the way you might actually do this differently in the future. And what I mean by that is the recovery part, but it also have invented good technologies and systems that will be available to someone in Australia who will have to deal with something like this in the future again and won't have to go about inventing the technologies and systems that we have. And we're very happy to put them on a shelf and hand them over to them next time round. But the people involved in the authority, many of you who've been part of it, can I thank you, because it's been an amazing process to watch and one that so many people should be proud of. Thank you.